My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Mark Moss Show, where we talk about the decentralized revolution, talking about the way the world is changing rapidly before our eyes. We're looking at it through the lens of politics, finance, and technology to understand, like I said, have better context of what's going on in the world today. Of course, I try to bring to you some education to help change the way you think. I bring the latest breaking news and some very smart and interesting guests, so you don't have to listen to me all the time. And I am excited to announce I'm in the studio today with Dr. Jeff Ross. He's the founder of Valshire Cap. You can find him on Twitter at Valshire Cap. That's Valshire Cap, if you want to figure out how to spell it. Anyway, Jeff, thanks so much for joining me today.
Mark, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah. So for everyone listening, at the Bitcoin conference, Bitcoin 2022 in Miami, Jeff and I and Jeff Booth and Preston Pish were all on a panel. That was super cool. And I was hoping to try to get the four of us back together again, but then things kind of fell off the hinges. But anyway, here we are. So excited to have you back.
Yeah, thanks so much. That was a lot of fun. It'd be fun to do a group with those guys again.
Yeah. I'm gonna try to dust that back off and pick it back up. My schedule got kind of crazy, and I had to drop the ball on that. And Preston's schedule is pretty tough as well. But I've been making content since 2018. And I remember, man, 2018, 2019 bear market. By 2019, man, there just was not much to talk about. But that's not the problem we have today. There's like a never-ending amount of stuff to talk about. And you're a great person to talk about it with. So let's dig into some topics here. I kind of want to hit on the very easy, simple topics of, like, you know, the economy, GDP, recession, things like that. If we have time, we'll talk about this financial repression, and maybe then we'll get into some assets like real estate and Bitcoin, things like that. Before we jumped on, we were looking at this chart of the NASDAQ, which we'll come back to in a minute. We'll table that for everybody listening. But this week was a pretty big week where we had two big announcements that came out. So we saw the Federal Reserve, the FOMC meeting came out, and they raised rates again. We saw the markets were betting that it would be a 0.75. Some people thought it'd be 1 point, probably didn't matter either way, but they came out with a 0.75. And the markets seemed to respond favorably to that. And then the GDP print came out, which was really bad, but it wasn't as bad as the Fed now had predicted it to be. And it seems like the markets really like this news. What do you make of all that?
Well, those are great questions. It's so hard to discern, you know, what is going on with the market because it's so emotional and there are just so many moving parts right now. So as most people probably know, if anyone's heard me before, I've been pretty bearish. I've been bearish since January, and I've only gotten increasingly bearish. I'm one of those annoying guys that nobody likes to be around because I bring the mood down of the room. You know, why did the market act that way to the Fed's announcement? I think part of it is because of the verbiage where Powell said they basically moved from accommodative to sort of neutral, a neutral rate right now. And so, we were accommodative, but people were expecting very hawkish. They're concerned that the Fed is going to continue to have to tighten for quite a while if inflation remains sticky high. I think what's happening is the market is starting to wonder out loud if we may have peaked, if inflation may have peaked, and maybe the Fed won't have to continue to be as aggressive as they've been talking about. I'll tell you the other thing I look at, Mark, is what are the Treasury yields doing? So what are the 2 and 10-year Treasury yields doing? Both of those are under, I think the 10-year, the last time I looked, was about 2.67 or so, and the 2-year was like 2.8. Generally, when the Fed fund rate gets to that level and those levels start to drop, so they've been up, right? The 10-year got up to like 3.2, 3.3-ish and has started coming down substantially. When that gets to about where the level of the Fed funds rate is, that basically forces the Fed's hand. It forces them to stop, to take a break, take a breather, and then to then switch over to getting dovish again, to get accommodative again. So I think the market is starting to sniff all of those different things out. And even though I think the economy looks absolutely horrendous right now, and even though I think the numbers are going to get worse before they get better, I'm wondering if we're possibly going from bad to less bad, and the risk assets are sniffing that out already.
When you say they go to neutral, what do you mean by that? What do you think they mean by that?
That's a nebulous term, and they never really answer it very clearly. They basically talk about there's this sort of nebulous natural rate that nobody can really see. But if we're below that, we're being accommodative. If we're above that, we're being restrictive on the economy. And there's this little sweet spot where they are. It always happens to be right around where the short-term interest rates are. I would say the free markets are better at figuring what that is. So what are short-term interest rates doing? They're right around kind of 2.75 to 3% right now. And so I think the Fed is sort of going off of that and saying when we're in that ballpark, we're basically at a neutral rate. We're not restricting the economy, but we're not being accommodative as well.
Another thing that I saw that they said is they were going to be more data driven. And that to me, and I'd love to get your opinion, but to me, I was afraid that the Fed gets very dug into their positions. They want to project way out in front what they're going to do. They don't want to surprise the market. So they told us in November they're going to start raising rates, and it didn't happen for months later. They're going to raise for this. They had this whole projection all the way through 2023. And I was afraid they would be dug into that, like they were dug into their let it run hot theory. And even when things were crashing, they were going to stick with that. But when they said they would be more data driven, then it made me think, well, maybe they do sense to the point you say the markets are seeing that CPI might come down. And if the markets are crashing and CPI is coming down, maybe they would respond to the data as opposed to being stuck dug in their position.
I think so. And I went back and listened to that part of it because I had missed that before. And I think that's significant. In the last few meetings, they were saying we are going to be very hawkish. We're probably going to raise, 0.5, 0.75. Possibly even one is on the table. This time they didn't mention anything like that. They didn't talk about actual rates that they're going to raise. They talked about possibilities. But yeah, they talked about being data dependent. And to me, again, it's what the bond markets are telling them. They're looking at the Treasury yields falling. That's usually what happens as we head into a recession, right? People buy safe haven assets. They buy Treasuries. So price goes up, yields drop. And then that forces the hand of the Fed on the short end of the curve. So I think that may be the sign. I think that's what they're watching for. And we're not going to know. We're going to see the CPI print come out, I think August 10th or something. We'll see the July CPI print, and then we'll see another print in September. And then the Fed will meet again. So it's possible that they're done raising rates, or they may try one more time, but I think the market will reject them pretty quickly if they try to do that.
Do you think the CPI prints will come down? So when we talk about CPI prints, we're talking about the number. So we came up with the latest number was 9.1, which was higher than the whatever 8.6 we were before that. And so do you think that that CPI print, do you think that inflation will come down? I mean, we did see gasoline prices come down, but rents make up a huge chunk of that basket. They don't move very fast. I mean, what do you think the odds of that really coming down are?
I personally do. I do think 9.1 was probably the peak, although to be very clear, I've been wrong before. I thought we were going to peak sooner than this. I thought 8.5 was the peak before. So it has been sticky high. But yeah, oil has come down substantially, about 30% or so, and that drives a lot of the factors in CPI. Yeah, rents are kind of coming up, but those are sort of lagging indicators anyways. Real estate tends to lag what the equity markets do and what Bitcoin does and things like that. One thing I've been reading this week, inventories in businesses have been building significantly as well. And so when you have inventories get built up, what happens is there's people just can't afford to buy things. Walmart, the CEO, was talking about this. Food and gas prices are so high that they just can't buy the clothes off the shelves anymore. So Right. Nobody wants these things. That will help to drive down prices as well. So I think we have peaked. That's my guess.
Yeah. I want to dig more into that specifically because I think there's things the Fed really can't affect that are driving CPI. And I think maybe over the decade, we might be at some of the lowest we'll see. We'll talk more about that. I want to talk more about a potential recession. Have they saved it off? Talk about this chart that you and I looked at that maybe is telling us things that we didn't think about before. We'll talk about real estate. We'll talk about Bitcoin and more. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. I'm in studio with Dr. Jeff Ross, the founder of Valshire Cap. You can find him on Twitter at Valshire Cap. And if you're not following me on Twitter, you should. It's just at @1 Mark Moss. We got a lot more to cover if you want to learn how to navigate this properly. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant.
players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We are talking about the decentralized revolution each and every week. And this week, I am in the studio with Dr. Jeff Roffs. He is the founder of Valshire Cap. You can find him on Twitter, at Valshire Cap. We got to do a panel together at the Bitcoin Conference 2022 in Miami this year. It was really cool, and so we're digging back into this macro theme. We just kind of talked about what the Fed did this week with the raising of the rates by 0.75, and we didn't talk about the GDP print. So we also saw that, and it looked like the White House came out in advance of the numbers and started telling us what you see isn't real, what you think isn't real, and they wanted to change the technical definition of a recession to negative quarters of growth. So that was pretty weird, I think. There's some truth to that, and we can dig into that if you want. But then the Fed now had been predicting, I think, a negative 1.6, and then the GDP print came out at negative 0.9. And so it was bad, but better. What's your take on that?
Well, it was basically as expected. I think most people that I was seeing estimates anywhere from positive, like half a point positive, all the way down to, you know, about negative 1.5 or so. So I think it just sort of fell within range. I think the powers that be knew that it was going to come out negative, so that's why they came out with this campaign this week. You know, that may be the technical definition, but that's not what a recession really is. There's this group called the NBER. I think it's the National Bureau of Economic Research, which is a group of academics who they've had the privilege of declaring an official recession, I think, since the late 70s. Now, the irony of them is they are the backwardest of backward-looking data people. So they usually come about a year later and say, yeah, it turns out we were in a recession starting about a year ago. So I expect the same thing to happen this time as well. I get Yellen's point and I get Powell's point. They're talking about unemployment being very, very low. They're absolutely right. But you know what? That's lagging data again. And so as the economy turns, as companies start to suffer, as earnings start to decline, we're already seeing small businesses, which are the most sensitive companies. I think it's 45% of small businesses are already on hiring freezes as of last week. And somewhere around 5% are actually letting go of employees already. So we should see unemployment start to rise.
And worse than that, I think it's 35% of small businesses aren't current with their rent. And I think it's 65% of businesses in the transportation sector are not current on their rent. They can't even make their payments. Of course, the consumer sentiment indexes are horrible. Manufacturing sentiment index, all the sentiments are horrible. I think 55% think that they'll have to shut their business down within the next 12 months. So the sentiments are really bad. But they did. So the White House came out and said, "Hey, look, that's not the technical definition. We also have to look at, to your point, employment, the economy, other factors." But to the point that you made about unemployment being historically low or whatever, I think that's another one of these CP lie, you know, kind of made up statistics, because yes, maybe it's true the economy added 400,000 jobs, but if you look at over a quarter, really we didn't add that many because of what we had lost before. But more importantly, the labor participation rate. So the participation rate is so low. So the employment rate only calculates the amount of people that have jobs that are looking for jobs, but it doesn't take all those people into consideration. And they've also lowered it to people who have less than full-time employment. And I think there's some people that probably have full-time jobs and part-time jobs. So I think that really skews the numbers. So while that one data point looks okay, if you look at it through multiple data points, I don't think that, and you're a bear, so I don't have to tell you, right? The numbers aren't really that good.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And I think they're being extremely disingenuous when they talk about these kind of stats as though, you know, we're looking healthy, the economy is strong. It's just not true, especially if you're a person living on the margin, right? If you're in the lower income echelons of the U.S., not only are you getting destroyed on the right hand by high prices, high grocery prices, high gasoline prices, you may not even be able to afford it with one job, so you're on your second job as well. Then on right. the other hand, you're at the highest risk of getting fired in the next couple of months too. And so it just gets harder and harder for those kind of people.
Yeah. Now, about the inflation peaked, I mean, you know, we can all sit here and guess and speculate on that. I think there's a lot of things that are driving inflation. So there's, I mean, they try to classify it with cost push and demand pull, right? And so the cost push is definitely going up. Costs are going up. Gas prices are so high that people can't afford to commute anymore. So I'll quit my job and I'll just stay home and collect unemployment. Now the employer has to pay people more to work that job. And so that's cost pushing up, of course, supply chains and the wars and blah, 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 blah. But then on the demand pull, I don't know what your take on this. Is demand pull really categorized as like, one, they printed so much more money, there's excess demand? Or is it where demand pull is more of a phenomenon where people think that refrigerator is going to be more expensive in the future, so I should buy that refrigerator today, or the home's going to be more expensive, I should buy that home today? And so I don't know if we're there yet. But either way, I don't see how the Fed's policies – I mean, I guess if they completely crush demand, which I think is what they're trying to do, just shut down, make everybody feel poor, I don't know if they can really affect inflation that much.
I hear you. I hear you. But I think that's what they're trying to do. Whether or not they'll succeed, it remains to be seen. I think what they're trying to do is to crush demand. Exactly. And so as more people on the, you know, again, at the people on the in the lower echelons of the income strata, as they get hit, as they lose their jobs, they're not going to be able to afford things like they were. Even like that's what came out with the Walmart results, right? The CEO was talking about how people, they have to spend more of their paycheck on gas and on food, so they just can't buy the clothes anymore. So now we're seeing inventories build up at lots of these stores. Yeah. As the inventories build up, people just, the supplies become more and more worthless because people just don't want these clothes. And so the prices, that'll drive prices down. The other effect, by the way, that's related to demand destruction, as real estate comes down, as equities come down, the wealth effect of the middle and upper classes, the people who own stocks, who own a lot of these assets, we're seeing, you know, those numbers come down significantly. People are down 10, 20, 30, 40%, yeah, depending on what your thing is. If you're an ARK investor, you're down 50, 60, 70%. Yeah. So they just don't have the ability, the room to buy so many things too. So I think that can help drive down prices. But yeah, it's anybody's guess. It's so hard to read this system right now and what's going to happen.
I had another Jeff on this week, Jeff Snyder, and you know, he says that the Fed's powerless, and I'll release that whole talk. The Fed's powerless, and the euro dollar market's so big, and they can't affect it, and blah blah blah. He likes to get into the technical definitions, and this is where him and I jockeyed back and forth a little bit, where he doesn't really believe in the wealth effect or the reverse wealth effect. And I'm just like, I mean, I don't have empirical data to show you, but like, I'm never going to sell my Bitcoin. I'm not going to sell my house, but I still feel less wealthy and I'm second guessing my vacations. I think the economy is going to be worse in the future and I might want to hold on my money today. Like, it's affecting me. It's affecting everybody I know. Like, so I agree with you on the wealth effect. It's real. I don't know how to quantify it, I guess, is the problem. But I made a video 2 weeks ago saying, does this mark the bottom? And I gave a bunch of data points as to why, and it was really partly triggered by that last CPI print that had come out. I thought that 9.1 was a shock and it was going to change everything, and I thought maybe that was going to be the bottom. So I want to talk to you through some of those data points, and then let's speculate on where we think the risk on assets, the NASDAQ, Bitcoin, et cetera, are going to go. And we'll talk about that chart we looked at before. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Mark Maugh Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution through the lens of politics, finance, and technology. I'm in the studio with Dr. Jeff Ross. He is the founder of Valshire Cap. You can find him on Twitter at Valshire Cap. I'm on Twitter at One Mark Moss. We've got a lot more to cover. Talking about the bottom. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if... No. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution each and every week, explaining to you the madness of the world, how we got here, what's going on, more importantly, where we are going. I'm in the studio with Dr. Jeff Ross. He is the founder of Valshire Cap. And we are talking about a lot of the market movements that happened this week, where we're at and where we're going. Now, if you've missed any of that, we're not going to recap it all. But don't worry, I got your back. You can check it out on the podcast. Just search Mark Moss Podcast. Find it on iTunes, the iHeart app, or on YouTube. I'll put these up on YouTube as well. Let's talk about the bottom, maybe. So 2 weeks ago, I made a video talking about, have we seen the bottom of Bitcoin and really kind of risk on assets in general? And what really sparked that was a couple things. One, it was that crazy high 9.1 CPI print, which you said earlier, you thought we would probably had reversed off of that, but here we were. And I think a lot of people were caught off guard by that, including the Fed. And what I was speculating on was that because it was so high, so much higher, the Fed would have to respond even more aggressively than they wanted to. And then it would move their dot plot forward. So they had wanted to raise rates through 2023. Now they'd have to be more aggressive, move it forward, which means they would probably finish raising rates this year, by the fall of this year. And I had a bunch of metrics and charts to show that. So I thought if they finish that, that means they pause this year. And then the risk on assets move well in advance of other assets. So when they announced, when the Fed announced they were going to raise rates in November, Bitcoin and the NASDAQ made their all-time highs at that point, where the S&P didn't make a high till January. And so if risk on assets move in advance, then maybe now that the market is going to say that they're going to move this forward, they'll stop raising rates, maybe risk on assets could start to rebound. And so far, it looks like that's about the case. Obviously, we won't know until we get further down the line and look backwards. But you and I were looking at a chart of the NASDAQ on a weekly chart back to 2008. And man, it's held up with its market structure. And you're a bear. What do you think about that? And the RSI shows extremely oversold. So
right. Yeah. And I'll tell you, I'm definitely questioning my bearishness. And I've been doing that for the last couple of days, even though I've still been fundamentally bearish. It's very possible.
How can you not be with all the damage, with all the danger out there? Right?
Exactly. So much danger out there. But at some point, it has to go from bad to less bad. At some point, we do bottom, right? And I'm aware of that. So I have a system. I'm a big fan of not trying to call bottoms. I try to wait until bottoms are confirmed with my system. And so I use a lot of moving averages and things like that. It's very possible that this move up that we've seen in risk assets is what did mark the bottom, that Bitcoin kind of marked it first and equities have followed as well. I'm reluctant to say that. Here's why, though. In past recessions, if we look back at the 2008-2009 recession and then the dot-com crash from 2000 to 2002, those were much longer recessions. And the common, the average amount of a bear market rally, so this kind of the recent rally that we've seen, that the average amount is 15% during a recession. What we've just seen with the S&P 500 is literally right around a 15% rally. So either we're just doing exactly what we always do in a recession and in big bear markets, and we're going to peak and then head back down again. That's still what I'm betting on. I still think that's what's going to happen. Or we have bottomed, and these we're going to retake some momentum indicators, and we're going to start a new bullish new bull market. I still remain skeptical, but I'm happy to be wrong if that means we can pivot and turn bullish and make money for our clients. I'd rather make money than be right, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I recently just did a video, which I've actually used many times before, which was the Wall Street psychology. You know, you've seen that one where it kind of shows, and it shows the crash and then there's the bounce, right? Yep. And so if you look back to the Great Depression, you look at the 2008 crash, you get about an initial 20-25% drop, followed by a 50% retrace. And then it just falls off a cliff. Mm-hmm. And so that's the typical pattern. Like I said, we've seen it many times before, and we're kind of right there right now.
Right
today.
There, exactly.
So we had the 20-25% drawdown. We've got the 50% retrace, and like maybe it could fall off a cliff.
Right. So that's what I'm doing. So I'm positioned. I'm kind of neutral right now, and based on my trading system, it's sort of leaning neutral because I don't know which way we're going to go. We could completely fall off a cliff, and that would make total sense to me. Or maybe it is the start of a new bull market. We'll see.
I had another one of our mutual friends on a week ago, and Lawrence Lepard, and he thinks that he agrees that the Fed, his base case, I should say, none of us know, we make assumptions and we assign probabilities to them, right? His base case was that the Fed would most likely pivot by the fall, probably by the election, midterms, but he thinks that we have a massive crash between now and then. That's it. That's his base case. I don't know, man. I'm the eternal optimist, right? We always have to be aware of our own bias, right? And I'm the eternal optimist. I always have to check my optimism bias.
Right.
We know what reality is, but man, the central banks are pretty good with magic, it appears, you know?
It's tough. That's what makes investing so interesting, is you just don't know. And like you said, it's all about probabilities. And so this is the first time since January where I'm at about a 50-50% probability. Like, I don't know if it's going to go higher or lower. I'm just following the system, and we'll see. I might just be sitting in cash for a while until a direction gets proven out.
Yeah, I'm certainly with you on the direction, right? Not trying to catch a falling knife. I like to ride trends. I always talk about I'm a surfer, so I ride waves. So I look for the storm. I go to where those waves are going to go for the storm, and then I wait and I ride the wave when it gets there. So that's how I think about investing. Look for the storm, position yourself, and then wait for the trend to develop as opposed to trying to catch that falling knife. Nothing wrong with being in cash right now today. Let's talk about real estate. I seen you talking about real estate a little bit before. I made another video recently about real estate, and I was talking about it from a couple different ways, right? And I think as investors, and you might agree with me, or feel free to disagree with me, but we can't call tops and bottoms until we're looking backwards on them. And so we just try to think about when things are cheap or expensive. And so if you look at real estate from a Case-Shiller index perspective, it's very expensive. It's never been more expensive. But as I showed in this video, like 94% of homes are purchased with a loan. So nobody buys the house. What they buy is a payment, right? And so then you have to look at the affordability index. And so like, well, what's the payment versus the income? And then you have to look at what's the rent versus buy. When it's cheaper to rent, people rent. When it's cheaper to buy, people buy. And so you have to kind of look at it. I argued from those perspectives. But then I asked a question, and I don't know the answer, so I'm going to ask you this question. I put it out to the audience, and I got a mixed bag of results. But if real estate, well, not if, since real estate has basically seen 100% increase over the last decade, when something moves up that strong and fast, isn't a correction healthy and expected? And so if we got a 15% pullback or a 20% pullback in real estate, is that a correction, or at what point does it become a crash?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's when you just get into technicalities, right, and definitions. I agree with you that it's healthy, and I think that's the problem with the centrally controlled financial system that we have, is the Fed and the central banks don't allow for these corrections, these reversions to the mean. When we see prices go up so far and so fast in these assets like real estate, like equities, like other things, they continue to prop them up every time they start to correct again. And so I think it's very healthy, and I think it should correct. In fact, I would love for real estate to overcorrect to the downside. You know, that's probably not what investors want to hear, but at least in the short term, it has become so unaffordable that it's pricing out. As you know, millennials and Gen Zers are having a tough time buying houses because of the prices that have gone so high. So I would love to see them pull back substantially, 30-40% for the most part. And I would love to see some of the huge investors like the BlackRocks and these private equity firms that own tons of real estate, I'd love to see them own less, honestly, so that I could get back to more of a reasonable valuation for first-time homebuyers. I think that's one thing that if we do get a pretty good recession, that's one thing that could happen, and that would be a healthy reset. So I think of corrections more as just, like you, a healthy reset, and that's a good thing. It's a good thing for capitalism in general, and a good thing for investing.
Yeah, I don't know. There could be danger there with BlackRock. I'm going to talk about that danger in a minute when we come back here. Listen to the Mark Moss Show. We're talking with Dr. Jeff Ross. We'll be back in a minute. Don't go away.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, politics, finance, technology, and of course, we're talking about Bitcoin as the technology changes the world as we know it. I'm in the studio with Dr. Jeff Ross, founder of Valshire Cap. You can find him on Twitter, at Valshire Cap. And we've been talking a lot of things about the economy, the GDP prints and inflation and so forth. But back to the comment you said about real estate for a second there, you know, one thing that you said just kind of caught me was to see some of this washout, maybe some of these Black Rocks that are buying up all the real estate. But what I'm afraid of is this, you know, by 2030, you'll own nothing, be happy, so to speak. And like every time we have these crashes, it seems like a way to transfer wealth from the rich, from the poor to the rich. And so look at the 2008 financial crash, right? What happens in a parabolic run, you start sucking in more buyers and eventually the market runs out of buyers and then it crashes off. And so whether that be the dot-com boom or the real estate market in 2008 or whatever Bitcoin market you want to call it, but in 2008, everyone started buying homes. People were lining up and they're buying 5 homes or 10 homes in, you know, at a time or whatever, right? And it sucked in more and more people. So 04, 05, 06, I mean, it sucked in the most amount of people. But then it crashed. And then millions of people lost their homes. And then it was the BlackRocks, not specifically BlackRock, but the Wall Street funds that went and just snapped them all up, got basically free money, had all this unlimited financing. And so it really transferred home ownership from the individual, millions of individuals, to institutions, and then the individuals became renters. And so while I would love to see the BlackRocks get shaken out, I'm afraid they have, actually I saw a report this week, like $50 billion, I think it said, sitting on the sidelines ready to snap up real estate. So to the point, I'd love to see them washed out. I'm afraid we see millions of people lose their home and then they deploy this $50 billion and they become an even bigger player. And that's where these booms and busts that happen. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, that's just how it works, right? I mean, it's the name of the game, honestly, is liquidity. And it's, do you have access to liquidity during the boom time so that you can juice your gains? And then during the bear times, the recessionary times, do you have a stockpile of cash sitting on the sidelines or something liquid, some sort of good collateral? Most regular people don't. Most people don't think like that. They don't plan for a rainy day. They don't save up, you know, $500,000 sitting in their bank so they can buy some cheap houses when we hit a recession. But BlackRock does, and they have access to capital. They have access to the credit markets. That's just kind of how the fiat system is wired. And the people who play the fiat system game really well, they just make endless amounts of money. And that's why we see, and I know you talk about this all the time, but these massive, huge inequality gaps for income. Like it's the rich get richer, the poor get poor. And that's just the name of the game for the fiat system, unfortunately.
So then what lessons can we learn from that? This is something I've been thinking about a lot lately, because in 2008, I was all in on real estate, and I had done really well, sold multiple businesses in different sectors, but I was all in on real estate. When it crashed, I got wiped out. My income was wiped out. I couldn't take advantage of all those sales, but I saw other people who came in, was able to get some credit lines and snapped them up, and they're in a completely different position than I was. And so then to the point that you just made, which I agree with, so thinking about it like that, then I guess people should try to think the opposite of what they typically do. So maybe instead of trying to deploy all their capital now, maybe stockpile not only their capital, but also maybe try to really work on building their credit lines.
Sure. And that's the best, that's the best fiat solution. Absolutely. There's lots of tricks for that. And that's what I used to talk about pre-Bitcoin. Like, what do? Build up strong credit lines, build up savings, earn more than you spend and all those kind of things. Invest wisely and prepare kind of rainy day funds and think about it from a kind of a more longer term perspective, like how to be a Warren Buffett individually for yourself and for your family. I tell people these days, I think the smartest thing to do is actually just dollar cost average into Bitcoin. Like if you have very little money, put a little bit of that, even if it's 10%. So say it's even like $5 a week or $10 a week, put that into Bitcoin, because Bitcoin does what basically home ownership used to do or should do for people. It builds your equity. So if you just kind of don't even think about it and just put it in, it's sort of like paying off your mortgage. You're just building your equity, whether you want to or not. That's the nice thing about having these automated systems. You're just building equity in the Bitcoin financial network, and then over time, your net worth will grow as Bitcoin appreciates in value.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Obviously, I talk about Bitcoin all the time on this show. but the other thing I want to talk about, we only have a couple minutes left, but is this financial repression. And so really, when nations get into deep debt, there's only a couple ways out. They can default. That doesn't really work. Austerity doesn't work. They can tax it away, but that won't work. And so then their last option is kind of like the financial repression, which is basically force people into buying government debt and bonds and then give them negative rates. So they'll pay you 3 or 4% while we have 7, 8% inflation. And that seems to me the most likely outcome. I mean, we're already in it, right? The IMF has put out papers in it that we're already seeing that. One, do you agree with that? And if two, then in that type of environment, do you think Bitcoin is still the best place to go?
I think you're totally right on. I completely agree with you. And I think that, they have these four options. I think what they always choose, if they have the ability to print money, that's what they're going to do. They're going to print money. They're going to debase the purchasing power of their population in order for the government to survive. So it's on the backs of their citizens, which, by the way, I hate. It drives me crazy. Bitcoin, for the first time, though, gives people a way out. And so I'm a little less optimistic for government that it's going to work as well this time around. I think what they're going to try to do is get American citizens to hold cash and hold treasuries. And then, as you say, they're going to basically inflate the value away. They're going to debase the value of the U.S. dollar. So the people who are stuck holding the treasuries are basically going to just watch their purchasing power evaporate over the next couple of years. We actually can opt out with Bitcoin. And I think normally I would say go to gold, go to hard assets, but I think Bitcoin is the best of those worlds right now. So I think it's extremely wise to preserve your purchasing power in Bitcoin. It's sort of outside. It's a parallel financial system that can't be touched or affected in the same way that these other assets can.
Yeah, I like to say that when the governments continue to print an unlimited amount of fake fiat currency, then you want to hold hard real things that they can't inflate. And so that brings us back to Bitcoin, which is something they can't create more of. And that certainly looks to be like the most likely outcome until something breaks, which we don't know what that is. But I think about it in terms of like the law of diminishing returns. And right, we can already see that each time they have to pump the bubble back up, it takes more money. So it's 700 billion TARP in 2008, and it was, I don't know, 7 trillion in 2020. And what's the next one going to be? 20? 20 trillion? And then it just affects less and less and less. And then eventually it just doesn't work. But who knows, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Eventually people don't want that currency that you keep creating more and more and more of. eventually people look at it and be like, why would I want this? If you can print 20 trillion of it, you know, over a year to debase your currency and pay off these unpayable debts, what's the point of even holding it? And so that's when people start hoarding hard assets, start hoarding Bitcoin and gold and real estate as well.
Yeah. I just covered an article earlier before you came on. The Cato Institute put out. So basically, the Fed, you know, they're trying to do the central bank digital currency. They opened up for comment, and they had thousands of comments that came in. Cato Institute went through all the data, and 66% of the respondents are completely against a central bank digital currency, which is great. That's great news. Yep. 30% are for it, but they don't seem to understand it per the responses. And so, man, if they switch to something like that, that could, and one of the fears they cited is it could actually force people out of the currency even faster.
Sure. Yeah, and absolutely.
Yeah. It's easy to see that, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's all of the terrible properties of fiat to begin with, and then it tacks on surveillance with it, and so, you know, and it's just a nightmarish, it's an Orwellian situation. So I think that would be the best marketing ever for Bitcoin if they actually came out with that.
I agree. So then it gives them a way to easily print more money, more stimulus, which just devalues the currency even faster. And then because the Orwellian system, nobody wants to hold it, and I mean it's the best marketing they could have. I agree. So. Anyway, man, we've covered a lot. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me today. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show. I'm in the studio with Dr. Jeff Ross, founder of Valshire Cap. You can find him on Twitter at Valshire Cap. That's pronounced like Vail and Shire Cap. And you can, of course, find me on Twitter at One Mark Moss. We covered the economy. We covered the data from the Fed. Did markets bottom and so much more. If you missed it, check it out on the podcast. Just search Mark Moss Podcast on the iHeartRadio Network or on YouTube. And that's what we got. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.